the Renaissance episode 113, Leonardo,
yeah.
part something, six, I think.
So he's still in his 20s. He's starting to paint on his own, not doing a perfect job, but, you know, he's out there. He's painting outside the box, no pun intended, and he's making some mistakes. But again, he's doing some of his signature trademark brilliant moves with perspective, with fingering. This guy is going places.
And he's obsessed with dicks and balls and buttholes.
Who isn't? Oh, no, edit that out.
Leonardo's first non-religious painting I want to talk about in this episode. Mm-hmm. It is a portrait of a woman, but not a vajayjay.
Oh.
Stayed right away from the vajayjay.
It's probably best.
He's like,
it's probably best.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't get the vajayjay.
He doesn't get it, and it doesn't get him. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Her name was Ginevra de Benci, and that's the name of the painting. So if you're playing along at home, look it up. Ginevra, G-I-N-E-V-R-A.
Whip this out.
Leonardo Ginevra, and you should pull it up. Yeah. Now, this is an astounding painting for a number of reasons. We'll get into it. And is historically very important, very innovative. And the woman herself is fascinating. So we're going to spend the entire episode probably talking about this painting.
Cool.
It is currently housed where, Ray?
Oh, not at your house?
No, Ray.
Is it the Uffizi? I honestly don't know.
It's just up the road from you
in Washington,
Revolution
D.C.
Central.
Yeah, that's right. I apologize. It was probably destroyed or they painted a cock and ball on it while they were breaking in. Who knows? Yeah. I'll have to go check it out.
Painted a Union flag on it.
Yeah.
It's the only Da Vinci on permanent display in all of the Americas.
Wow.
It's at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Ginevra Da Vinci. Now, this is even earlier than the other paintings that we've talked about, apparently. The books that I read was suggesting that he painted it when he was only 21, which would make it around 1473, 1474, which is astounding, really, when you look at what's going on in this.
Yeah.
It is revolutionary as a painting in many ways. One of his contemporaries wrote that he painted Ginevra di Amerigo Benci with such perfection that it seemed to be not a portrait but Ginevra herself.
Mm.
And it was considered a major break from Verrocchio's studio in a number of ways. What is one of those ways, Ray?
Ooh, don't know. Hold on.
Just one, Ray. Give me one way. There are three ways.
Three ways.
Can I have one way that it's a major revolutionary break from Verrocchio Studio, Ray? Just one.
Oh, one. Okay, I'm raising my hand. There's a painting on the back of it. Was that one of them?
No.
Damn.
That was not one of them. No.
I know we fingered it. I know there is muted colors in the lighting and that he was known for. What else is there?
How about I'll walk you through the ways and let's see if that helps. Then I'll ask you afterwards.
Oh, I wouldn't do
and
that.
You can edit all my bit out.
I wouldn't do that if I were. And then, that's a good idea. Let me write that down.
Yeah. It'll look like you actually give a shit. First, it's secular.
Oh.
It's a secular painting. We haven't seen any secular paintings come out of Verrocchio's studio. This is a secular painting, Leonardo's first secular painting and the first painting that we know of, from this period that's secular. We've talked a lot about when we did the Botticelli stuff, and the Botticelli stuff is later. The secular paintings come in the 1480s.
Right.
Like 1480. So this is a secular painting. It's a portrait of a woman, which is a big fucking deal.
Who's not married. Yeah.
Well, she was married around about this time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether this is before or after, we don't know. But it's she was married around about 1474. Right. This may have been painted a year or so earlier.
Right, no, but what I meant was she was not Mary, Mother of God. It was a female who was not the Madonna.
Oh, Mary.
Yeah, Mary. Yeah. I'm sorry,
I
my
thought
accent.
You said married.
Sorry, my accent.
Sorry.
That's fine.
Mary, yes, not Mary, yes. Well, it's secular, so obviously it's right. Not going to be of Mary. Second, it's modelled on similar portraits done by the Flemish masters like Jan van Eyck and Hans Memling. And by the way, we need to do, I know we talked about Jan van Eyck in an mm-hmm. earlier episode.
Yeah.
We really need to do, I think, just a whole series on him in the Renaissance, because the more I look at his stuff, the more I'm like, damn, this guy was just way ahead of anything.
Right.
The Italians were doing,
but
he was like,
right,
hold my beer, motherfuckers.
So why doesn't he get the press? Is it because it's not a part of the Medici, is not a part of the Italian Florentine Renaissance? Is it just the context around him, I wonder?
Yeah, I think it's probably all of those things. I think he's also Flemish.
Yeah,
no one likes the Flems. I mean, it's just the very word phlegm.
It's not pleasing.
Yeah. No one likes phlegm. We don't want phlegm. Ugh.
How would you like to become a master of phlegm? Say no.
Yeah, phlegm? No thanks.
Phlegm.
I mean, I think it's also because, like, his early stuff is well and truly in the Gothic space, right? So we're talking Renaissance. But, you know, he did some really interesting stuff. Like, okay, check this out. Google Jan van Eyck, his Ghent altarpiece, Ghent, Ghent altarpiece. This was completed in 1432.
Right.
It's a massive thing with a ton of different panels.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Zoom in on Eve on the far right up the top.
Okay.
Now, ugly as fuck.
Yeah.
And it's all the women look the same in his paintings, but look at the depiction of her body. Look at those breasts.
Right.
They're the best breasts I've seen painted so far. You know, they're better than Botticelli's breasts.
Yes, yes. Good breasts.
I made such a big deal over Botticelli painting sexy breasts. And she's got bush. I mean, we don't see a vagina, but she's got bush.
Right.
She's got sexy. I'd hit that. Okay, maybe with the head. I'd have to put a bag over her head. But
oh, she's sleeping.
That, you know, the rest of
right,
it.
Right, right.
She's got a hot bod.
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit of a tummy on her, but it's okay. Like, she's... look at that. He painted that in 1432. That's 50 years before Botticelli did The Birth of Venus.
The detail is incredible. And the accuracy, that is incredible.
Yeah. Joseph? No, Adam on the other side.
Yeah.
Adam, like the depiction of his body,
right.
The detail.
Oh, my God.
Amazing. Have a look at the veins in Adam's arms.
Yeah.
Look at the veins.
Oh, my God.
Look at that.
It looks like a real...
Incredible.
If you ignore the head for a second and just look at the body, it looks like a real person standing there, not a painting.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah. Look at the faces on the people that are singing next to Adam.
Right.
Like, there's real emotion in those faces. I don't know why.
Ginger convention.
Nothing going on.
Right.
They're just...
No, but you're
they're
right.
They're just singing.
Yeah, but they got different expressions.
Like intense
yes.
emotion
yes.
expressions.
And they're not flat.
Anyway, yeah. we have to do a whole series on Jan van Eyck, because I want to know more about this guy. I'm sort of stunned every time I look at his
done
thing.
And done.
Anyway.
Yes.
Back to, so he modeled this portrait on what the Flems were doing.
Right.
Painted it entirely in phlegm was the secret there.
I kind of knew that.
He had to mixed his oils with phlegm. one of the things he did paint in oils, which we know wasn't common in Italy at the time. They were still painting in tempera. He was painting in oils, which he got from the Flems. But it's also the first Italian portrait to turn a woman from side-on profile to facing forwards.
Right.
This was not done before Leonardo painted this painting.
So the three-quarter turn that we have here, where we can see obviously most of her front and her face and she's not to the side, I mean, that's a big deal because it hasn't been done before. Is it because what, women weren't taken seriously, or they weren't considered, besides the Mary, worthy of art? I just wonder why that was.
My guess would be is that it's too sexual.
Ah, to put it right in your face. I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah.
There's a profile. Yeah. You can only get so hot and bothered about a profile.
Yeah.
I got you. I got
yeah.
you.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when the woman is looking at you here, she's looking okay, at me. Now I'm starting to wonder, like, yeah. you know, does she want to fuck me?
Yeah. Yeah. She's thinking about it.
Would I hit that? Yeah. I mean, it's okay if it's Virgin Mary.
Right.
Because, I mean, everyone already wants to hit right. the Virgin and Mary, obviously.
God's already tapped it, so he didn't care.
Yeah. God, you know, God's given us all the go-ahead, you know, and the whole, you know.
I have been here.
She rents it.
Yes.
Rents out her services at night. Don't wake me.
Yeah, but it is a little bit sensual, so I can see that being a threat or being discomforting to these Christians.
So nearly every portrait of women painted in Italy before this, they were side profile. It was a wedding painting. They were had a severe look on their faces because they were getting married. And they're like, oh fuck.
It's an arranged marriage. Fuck this.
They dressed up in their finest dresses, laden down with jewelry and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
This one, she's facing the viewer and she's wearing very simple clothing, no jewelry that we can see.
Right.
So it's a dramatic innovation here, which must have been very surprising and shocking to everybody in Florence at the time.
Mm, yeah, very brown clothes, a black shawl around her neck, which I read was in the fashion at the time, hair done up in the back, very simple. So it's like, again, just kind of low scale or low key, I guess. But again, the detail, and I'm sure we're going to go into this, but the detail, her skin is incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Her skin's incredible. Her eyes, her hair,
the curls,
the juniper bush
yes.
behind her. Now her head seems to be growing a juniper bush, out of her hair.
Right.
Now, apparently, this is a wordplay on one hand because the root of Ginevra is connected to the Italian word for juniper, ginepro.
Oh.
So it's a bit of a wordplay.
Right.
Also, it's apparently symbolic. The juniper was symbolic of female virtue.
Right.
Thirdly, she liked a martini. Apparently, so
that makes sense. That makes sense. Shaken or stirred? I don't know.
Stirred. You don't want to shake it because the ice bruises the gin. So you don't want to do
now,
it. She knew that. Right. She, you know.
I knew that she had come from a wealthy family. I knew that she was highly educated. I know that she wrote poetry and that she was known for her virtue. So all that ties into the name as well. And I guess, so this is a big step up for Leonardo to get this commission from to paint this young woman, like you said, non-religious, very the second richest family, correct me if I'm wrong, in Florence, and he gets this commission. So this is a big deal for him, and he certainly hits it out of the park.
Can I tell you what's messed up about James Bond?
Nothing.
Shaken, not stirred, will get you cold water with a dash of gin and dry vermouth. The reason you stir it with a special spoon is so not to chip the ice. James is ordering a weak martini and being snooty about it.
Well, I'll reflect on that while watching my digital enhanced picture with theater quality sound.
Okay.
Love that show. Love it. Just a little tangent they would go off on. Love that.
Yeah. So that's the juniper bush. And look, the detail in this juniper bush is just
You could see individual.
Insane.
Yes. What do you call it? Leaves, strands? I don't know what to call it on a juniper bush, but you can see individual. I mean, how long did it take?
Thousands.
Yes.
Thousands of individual leaves, and each one is shaded differently.
Oh, yeah.
It's not. He didn't just paint the leaves once. He shaded them all differently. And, like, there's so much depth in this tree. It's, like you really feel like you could reach out and touch the tree.
Exactly. And with the sun behind it, like you said, he shaded certain parts where the light was getting through a little bit. Those are lighter, those are greener or whatever. And then there's dark, almost brown. And everyone is different. And that's the way it literally would be if you were standing there looking at a real one. So you're right. You feel like you could touch it or her because she is lifelike.
If you look at the curls in her hair, yes. Again, he's painted hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of individual strands of curly hair and then shaded each one of them individually in three or four different colors and some luster where the sun's shining.
Exactly. On the right-hand side, there's like hints of light hitting her hair, but only in certain parts of the curl, the parts that are closest to the sun. Again, just amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
And if you look at her eyes, he has nailed eyes.
Yes.
I think the first person, at least in Italy, who had nailed eyes. You zoom in on them, they've got a bit of a watery sheen to them, and the glint or the luster
right.
in each eyeball, just to the right of the pupil. Tiny little detail that you have to really zoom in on my monitor to see.
Right.
But, you know, he noted that eyes always reflect a little bit of light, and that just makes it look more realistic.
Yeah.
Now, the other innovative thing that you can't pick up
right.
From the painting as it is today, though, is that it was one of, if not the first, portrait in Italy to show the subject's hands.
Oh, okay.
Now, the version of it that survives doesn't have any hands.
Right.
And the framing of the whole thing looks a little bit weird as it is today. And that's because it was originally longer, they think, and it had her hands down below. But at some point, somebody went, hands, schmands. And cut them off.
Even though they are exquisite.
Yeah, maybe they had a frame and they wanted to fit it into a frame. And it's like, just trim it.
I can either cut off her head or I can cut off her hands. You choose. All right, the hands it is.
Yeah. Now, the hands, we believe we have a study of. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's a silver point drawing. It survives today in the Royal Collection at Windsor Castle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a study of the hands, and it would fit with this painting. If you put the two of them together, they seem to match, to go. So they think that was part of the original painting, but the hands from the painting have gone, unfortunately. But this was, according to my notes, probably the first portrait in Italy, and a portrait not of, you know, Mary or something like that, but somebody who is alive, a contemporary portrait showing their hands. Now, why didn't they paint hands in portraits before this, Ray?
Ooh, I don't know. Was it too challenging, the detail, to get it right? I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I think it was just real fucking hard.
Right.
That's what it was.
Now, I had...
And they were like, hands.
I didn't write it down, but I read something. I might be getting my paintings mixed up. Wasn't there a Verrocchio sculpture that had... that looked a lot like this woman, this painting. I had read something.
You don't have that in your notes. You just read something about it somewhere.
Maybe it was a YouTube video.
You don't even bother writing notes anymore now, right? You just listen to an audio book and then hope you can remember some of it later.
I am sensing...
Is that your strategy now?
I am sensing disappointment.
I'm just asking.
No. I've got it somewhere,
dude,
but I'm...
We're way beyond disappointment, right? It's been resignation for years.
No, I'm stalling you as I'm looking through my notes trying to find it. So,
meaning you're
here we go,
flipping through a book that you borrowed from the library.
A bust by Verrocchio, Lady with Flowers, because it represents the hair, the hands, actually even her clothes, the way the dress goes, and the little button at the top of the colored ribbon or whatever that's holding her dress together. Her hands in this bust seem to be a lot like these in the painting. But again, for some reason, years down the road, someone cuts off the bottom one third of the painting.
Well, judging by the silver point, one of her hands, her right hand, is playing with the lace of her bodice.
That's sexy.
It is sexy. And I wonder if somebody went, oh, that's a bit racy. It looks like she's open it up. And we will see boobs.
Boobs and bush.
Got to get rid of that.
Yeah, can't.
Too racy.
Right. Are those carnations? Now what is she holding there? I don't know. I just see red flowers.
Well, we don't
know. Okay. If we don't know, we don't know.
Where do you see red flowers?
I'm looking at an optimized version. So maybe it was something that someone took the original painting and then added on the hand. So.
Oh, right. Well, in the silver point, she seems to be holding something, but it's cut off. Oh, we don't actually see gotcha. What it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Probably some sort of flowers, though.
Alrighty.
Now, the woman herself is interesting. Like most portrait subjects during the Renaissance era, she came from a wealthy family. She was very well educated. She was also known as a poet Aww. And a great conversationalist. She was about 16 when this was painted.
Right.
Only one line of her poetry survives, and this is it. I beg your pardon, I am a mountain tiger.
I don't know what to do with that.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, there could be a number of ways to interpret that, but the way it comes across to me is she's saying, I'm fierce.
Right.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, but
I'm not.
I took a DNA test and turns out that I'm that bitch, so don't fuck with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, I beg your pardon, but I'm a mountain tiger. Yeah. You know, you may try and stick your hand between my legs. I'll chop it off, man. I'm a mountain tiger. What have you done for me lately?
Yeah. Oh, my God. So, again, a big deal for him to get this commission, because I think his father, Piero, might have gotten this commission because he was a notary and he worked for this family on several occasions. So some, oh, you want your daughter painted? I know just a guy, you know, whatever. So pretty big deal, pretty big deal to be able to be the loud one to paint the 16-year-old girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Her father seems to have known the family, not surprising, seeing as he was a notary, knew a lot of people right. in Florence, the wealthy.
The right people.
And the right people. Yeah. And she was sort of betrothed around about this period to a guy called Luigi Di Bernardo Niccolini. I'm not sure if he's related to Niccolo Niccolini, yeah. the great seeker of books that we talked about earlier yeah. on. Probably.
Could be.
Probably from the same family line, right. somewhere along the line. Apparently, a number of guys dedicated poems to her. She,
right.
like Amerigo, like the chick that was the model for The Birth of Venus. Mm-hmm. What was her name?
I can't recall. Oh, nope. That's gone. But everybody admired her. She was like the pride of the town. Everybody admired her beauty and wrote sonnets or poetry.
Simonetta yeah. Vespucci.
The hot one.
Married to the brother or cousin of Amerigo Vespucci.
Right.
Apparently, this chick was similar. Right. Like, she was the muse of a lot of men who wrote poems to her, about her, desired her from afar. One of these classic Renaissance Petrarch-style platonic
right.
loves. People who wrote poems to her include Lorenzo de' Medici.
Wow.
And also Bernardo Bembo. Bembo was the Venetian ambassador to Florence in the mid to late 1400s.
Yeah.
And she was his mistress, platonic mistress.
Thank you.
She was married. He was married. But it was one of these, listen.
Yeah,
I think you're hot.
Right.
I think you're beautiful. I would fuck you, right. but, you know, I can't.
Right.
So what I will do instead is just tell everyone that yeah. I would love to tap that.
And
really.
You're actually stimulating intellectually. I've read your poems or whatever. You're a good conversationalist. But I'm currently busy with my own wife and mistress. You know how that is. But again, if they ever... chance ever came up, I'd totally hit that. But I will admire you from afar, jerk off many times thinking about you. I hope that's okay with you.
Mm.
I'm doing it right
that's
now.
That's what this painting was.
Right.
It was a jerk painting, I think.
It was a fat painting. Okay. All right.
Fap.
Yeah.
Now she, what, look at her expression in this painting. What do you get?
She is barely tolerating my existence and I love it. I want her even more. It's neutral. I don't know. It's like it's distance. It's mysterious. I don't know what she's thinking. She's almost got the 1,000-yard stare.
Yeah, she seems to be staring right through you, past you, over your right shoulder.
Right.
Yeah. Well, people are looking above you. I hear a voice. Where is it?
Oh,
where's it coming from?
Hey, down there.
A little squeak. Yeah. Yeah. I do want to point out that she has more eyebrows than I've seen in any painting of a woman today. They're still fairly slim, but at least they're noticeable. Still not much in the way of eyelashes,
right?
Though.
Yeah, but still.
Barely see the eyelashes.
The eyes are captivating.
I think she's plucking her eyelashes.
Yeah, plucking like a motherfucker, but captivating.
Yeah, but there's a sense of haughty dismissiveness, I think, about her. She's like, don't even. She's like, speak to the hand. If you could see a hand, that's what it'd be. Just like, talk to the hand.
Go feed my horse.
This face ain't listening.
Yeah, go walk my horse. Yeah.
Very sort of not impressed, not happy, just kind of snooty a little bit, maybe unemotional. I don't know. But one of the theories is that maybe she was getting married and she wasn't very happy about that, because I think the guy she was marrying, Nicolini, was twice her age.
32.
So, ugh.
Yeah. Oh, old coot.
Yeah. Oh, old 32. Oh, my God. Another might be that Bembo.
Right.
Her bimbo from Florence was leaving.
Oh, she was sad.
He was going back to Venice,
right?
And she was like, "Oh, right. So you said you loved me, and now you're leaving. That's great.
The one bright spot I had, you're taking off. Now I got to be stuck with my old man. Fuck." But here's another interpretation. Because her expression is neutral, maybe we're assuming she's having negative thoughts or whatever, because she's not smiling. Just because there's an absence of smiles doesn't mean she's necessarily depressed. Maybe she's just like, it's none of your fucking business what I am, who I am, what I'm thinking, and so you're just getting the poker face. I don't know, but it's pretty neutral.
Although Leonardo did write that if the whole point of painting a portrait was to capture the person's emotion. And this is considered the first psychological portrait designed to explore or reveal the sitter's personality. The motions of the mind is what Leonardo called it.
Right.
So consensus seems to be that he's deliberately trying to capture an emotion. Now, one of the contemporaries who wrote a poem to her, Alessandro Bracchisi, wrote these lines: "Ginevra shed tears as you go, Bembo. May she desire long delays and beseech the gods above that every difficulty may hinder your journey. And may she wish that the kindly stars with adverse winds and heavy storms prevent your departure."
Wow.
So seemed to be, you know, well known in Florence at the time that she was sad about Bembo leaving. And that may be what Da Vinci was trying to capture here. We don't know.
But if her father is the second richest man and a Medici supporter, maybe the father whispers to whatever Medici's in charge at the time, "Hey, there's this guy. My daughter's infatuated with him, but she's either getting married or she's married to someone else. I don't need the headache. Could you maybe have this guy dismissed?" I mean, who knows what's going on, but she does seem to be heartbroken or crushed or whatever by his departure, at least in this painting, because she's not happy.
So she was a fierce intellect, it seems, and this is a breakthrough painting.
Right.
Now, it's also apparently the first portrait to integrate the subject into an uninterrupted natural landscape. There are no buildings, no walls.
Right.
Just nature in the background. And in this case, we don't have the craggy, you know, Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings landscape.
Right. It's pleasant.
It's an idyllic, setting. Bit of a stream there, a few hills, few trees.
And the reflection of the water is beautiful. Or what's being reflected off the water, yeah.
Very peaceful, harmonious setting. Now, getting back to, you know, I said before that the mountains are a little bit foreboding in the background. I think the juniper tree is a little bit spiky. And she's in the middle.
Yes, like she could be hurt. You don't want to get too close to it.
Or she had a spiky personality. Maybe she was a little bit spiky.
Herself. Wow.
Yeah. You take that look in her eyes.
Yeah.
And the spikes, the sharp, highly defined spikes of the juniper tree that's like in your face.
Right.
It takes up 2/3 of the painting, this juniper tree. Spiky leaves. Looks like rosemary spikes, you know, all over it. Yeah, I think he's saying, don't get too close to this one, boys. Yeah.
Be careful what you ask for.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
If he painted her vajayjay, I'm pretty sure there'd be spikes coming out of it and teeth. I think that's what he's trying to depict here.
He probably thinks that's in every vagina, but yeah, I agree with you, you know.
Yeah, might as well be as far as he's concerned. Now, this is apparently also very daring to paint her in a natural landscape because women at the time were supposed to remain indoors, not be seen, not be heard.
Hear, hear.
They would apparently be reprimanded if they stood too long in front of a window.
Wow.
Because men might look at them and get, you know.
Ideas.
Thoughts.
Right.
And if men start desiring women.
Oh, where are we going to go? Where's that going to end up?
Well, I mean, they won't. Well, who's going to fuck me up the ass if men start getting interested in women? That's not right.
Oh.
So that was one reason they had to keep women indoors.
Gotcha. Preventive measure. Okay. All right.
Yes.
Respect the anus.
Now, apparently Leonardo was still struggling at this stage to figure out how to mix and use oils, but, look, did an amazing job here. Apparently, if you stand close enough to the painting at the National Gallery in Washington, you can see his fingerprint just to the right of her jaw,
right,
where the ringlets of hair blur into the background of the juniper tree. In the version that I've got, which is a sort of a Wikipedia scan, you can see that.
Right.
You zoom right in and you can see Leonardo's fingerprint on the canvas.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
I was looking at a video and I guess maybe they were using the original one, but they zoomed in high res and her skin looks flawless. Her skin looks real. I mean, she does come across as a realistic person who's just standing there who could at any second break out into a smile or a snarl, whatever, but she looks like she could come to life from this painting at any moment, and it would be believable. The details are like that.
Yeah, like her skin is flawless, and the depth and the shading, the shadow, the light on her forehead, just it glows.
Under her chin.
Skin glows.
Yeah, it's amazing. Absolutely.
Really is amazing. Yeah. Have a look at the little gold pin that's holding her.
Okay.
Whatever that is, I don't know what you call that, her blouse together at the top of the blouse.
The undergarment.
Just a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Just a little gold pin in there. You just see tiny little details, speck of gold, little bit of shadow even behind it.
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Really amazing.
I wouldn't even think to draw that, much less be able to draw that. But he's like, this is what you would really see if she was here. And so that's what I'm drawing or painting. So. Yeah, incredible.
Amazing attention to detail there. Now, a lot of people, a lot of scholars also say that this was the start of Leonardo's interest in painting women in interesting ways, painting them as strong, thinking, capable beings. Now, the Mona Lisa doesn't come for another 30 years, but this is the proto Mona Lisa.
You could see it.
Lisa,
yes, right? You could see it here.
Yeah. He's figuring out how to paint strong women, give them a sense of authority, emotion, will, intelligence, but it's not overt. I mean, she's not, you know, got a big grin on her face and giving you the middle finger. It's very, very subtle, as is famously the Mona Lisa's, you know, expression and her smile. But with this too, with Ginevra, you just see this, there's some sort of strength and emotion and disappointment, maybe bitterness, maybe haughtiness coming out of her. It's very slight but very bold to have a woman depicted this way in 1474 or whenever it was.
And I find that interesting because we just went on about how he wasn't interested in women in a certain way, and yet he's using them to break norms and to break standards. And so he's like a shock jock and a painter mixed together, and he's using women that he doesn't prefer to do it. I just find that all interesting because this is, you know, he's just shaking things up. And you get the sense that he's like some of the other artists who were like, don't tell me what to do. I'm going to break all the rules and you're going to love me for it because of my execution is going to be so flawless.
Yeah. But it must have been incredibly bold and shocking in its day to paint a woman this way. Now, you mentioned that she was a daughter of rich bankers that were close to the Medici, and she was educated at a convent, which her banker father and grandfather supported.
Right.
The black scarf that she's wearing, I read, was supposed to be a scapular, basically like the female version of a priest's vestment.
Oh.
Marks her as a conversa, a lay sister of the order.
Wow.
Had the freedom to come and go from the cloister.
Okay.
So she's a lay sister. That's what the black scarf is all about, according to a couple of the books that I read anyway.
Gotcha. And this is going to sound whatever, but even, and I just can't get over the light and the shadowing, even up under her nose. I know that sounds silly, but like you could almost feel like you could see into her nose, and the shadow and the light is correct for what it would really be if she was standing there. Again, and even under the bottom lip, the shading, it is flawless. It is realistic.
So delicately done.
Yes.
Unimaginable to me how
he's in his 20s.
Artists can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Early 20s. Yeah. Very early 20s.
Exactly.
Now, she got married when she was 16 to Nicolini, who was a wool merchant twice her age. Her dowry was 1,400 florins. To put that into perspective, one book I read said one florin could purchase 30 chickens. That tends to be how I measure women's values in chickens, usually.
That's a shit ton of chicken. Wow. Wow.
Her father had died, and her uncle, Bartolomeo, had probably negotiated her betrothal.
Right.
Luigi, her husband, ended up becoming Gonfalonieri.
Nice.
But at the time of her nuptials, he was of a lesser lineage right. than her family. So he really had to step up. Right. It was a good marriage for him.
Right. But did you read about the tax return? Things weren't always so rosy. So he marries her. He gets this dowry. And this probably goes back to the pallor of her skin. But in 1480, when he has a tax return, he writes that he has more debts than he does property, and that she had been sick for a while and seen numerous doctors. So between the financial drain and the physical drain on her, I imagine it was a very difficult time for them. But even though her skin, I just assumed her skin was really white because, like you said, she spent most of her time indoors. Maybe she was indoors and she was sick for a very long time, but that doesn't take away from any of the beauty that he was able to put on the painting as far as conveying her skin.
Yeah, she was apparently very sickly, never had children, so he might kind of been happy with that right. aspect of it. Now, the fact that she was the platonic love of the Venetian ambassador, Bembo, probably would have meant that she was pulled into the inner circle of the Medici and the philosophers and artists and poets that hung around them, Florence's high society.
Right.
She would have ended up there anyway, though, I'm sure, because she was daughter of wealthy banker families.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently this Bembo guy is an interesting character, very charismatic, handsome, extravagant, dubious ethics, very good politician.
Right.
He was 42 at the time, had both a wife and a mistress.
Hell yeah.
But he's in Florence and he's like, well, you know, I've got to do something to entertain myself while I'm here.
Some strange.
And so he was very public, very proudly public in Florence about his relationship with her and how much he adored her. But as we've said before, these relationships were platonic.
And they were accepted, and right? Another, were they, I mean, it's like,
Yeah.
It's an intellectual, I think you're beautiful, I admire you from afar. And so if anything, it's a compliment. It's not leery and we're worried about you groping her or whatever. It was almost a compliment. And so it was pretty accepted in Florence at the time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of similar to, I don't know, admiring a famous actress, movie star or something like that, going, oh, my God, like yeah. She is the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Right. Like, I'm not gonna tap it.
Right, or can't, stalk her or whatever.
But. For a whole variety of reasons. Yeah, but...
I admire her.
You know, yes, I think she's gorgeous, and I'm going to tell everyone that I think she's gorgeous. And if my wife doesn't like it, tough fucking titties. That's just how it is. She does have tough titties, my wife. She's had 15 children. Tough titties, and I like.
And I've got sharp teeth.
Nice
anyway,
soft titties,
right? Yeah.
another contemporary, Cristoforo Landino, wrote a verse about their love. He said, "It is with these flames and with such a love that Bembo is on fire and burns and Ginevra dwells in the midst of his heart."
Aww.
So it was, they were all out there. Everyone knew about it. They were talking about it. He was like, oh, yeah. You know, I'm rubbing one out every night thinking of her.
Yeah, it's like a salute, except for there's an orgasm at the end.
Yes. Now, exactly who commissioned it has been debated for decades. As I said before, it could have been a wedding portrait, but it would be very unusual for a wedding portrait in that she's not displaying her jewelry and her wealth and all that kind of stuff. Most art historians now agree that Bernardo Bembo was probably the patron. But I don't think he ever got it. I think by the time Leonardo finished it, Bembo had left.
Right.
And the whole thing just, it was too late for him to get it to him. And one piece of evidence, you mentioned that it's got a painting on the back. It's got like a motto painted on the back of it, and it's got some more juniper and that kind of stuff. Apparently the original motto... was the Virtus e Honor, which was the motto that Bembo used himself, virtue and honor.
Right.
Virtus e Honor. But at some point it got painted over to Virtutum Forma Decorat. She adorns her virtue with beauty.
Oh, nice.
So, looks like it was originally painted as a jerk painting for Bembo, but when he'd left and he's like, well, fuck, I can't take it back to Venice with me. My wife,
it'd be awkward.
You know, she's not going to tolerate that. We've got an agreement. When I'm away,
The cat will play.
The cat will play.
Yeah.
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 What happens in Florence stays in Florence. Everyone knows that. But I can't bring it home with me. Fuck you, Da Vinci. You wasted my fucking time with that. So he gave it or sold it to somebody else, had to change the motto on the back.
Did you read anywhere, I mean, I'm not sure how common this is because this is the first one I've run across, but when you have a painting or you have some kind of artwork on the back of a painting, it's called an emblematic portrait. I wasn't sure if you had run across that. But supposedly, if you use infrared, you can see the original phrase or slogan that was there before it was changed. I hadn't sure if you'd run across that. And did you know that when Washington got it, we got it from Prince Francis Joseph II of Liechtenstein, and someone in Washington, whoever, probably my tax dollars, paid $5 million for it. That's what it cost to get it over here.
Yeah. Well, this, like the Madonna that we talked about earlier, was lost for centuries.
Oh, my God.
We knew it existed because Vasari talks about it. Mm-hmm. We had these poems that talked about it. And then it turned up in the possession of the royal family of Liechtenstein.
Right.
They probably got it from some Jews.
Yeah. Let's be honest.
World War II.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because we bought it in 67, so yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Turned up.
Don't ask any questions. Yeah.
Yeah. No, no, yeah. Where'd you get it from? We don't know. It just turns up.
Don't have the receipt.
Still has some teeth attached to it. Some gold teeth stuck on the back. But yes, now it's in Washington.
Nice.
Now, Piero da Vinci had served as the notary for the Benci family on many occasions. Leonardo had become friends with Ginevra's older brother, who lent him books, and would end up as the temporary custodian of Leonardo's unfinished Adoration of the Magi that we'll get to later on.
Right.
But as you said earlier, it closely resembles a sculpture by Verrocchio, The Lady with Primroses, which was created in 1470, modelled on who, Ray?
Oh, God. Nope, gone. Who is it?
Lorenzo's platonic mistress.
The hot one.
Lucrezia Donati.
Yeah. Mm. There's only a few women, and they're all being sculpted and painted. And
yeah.
So they're like the first Kim Kardashian. I gotcha.
Yeah. Lucrezia was also the model for Botticelli's painting of Fortitude that we mentioned earlier, where she also has fierce eyes.
Yeah.
But yes, so that is, I guess that's it really. Major innovation in a bunch of different ways that I talked about, major breakthrough, at least in Italian portraiture.
Right.
I never really paid much attention to this painting before, but I really enjoyed getting down into the detail of it and recognizing why it's such a major breakthrough and eventually leads to its most famous sister painting, the Mona Lisa. But that comes, as I said, many, many decades later.
Yeah. But again, he's in his 20s. He's starting to branch out on his own. He has to be grateful to Verrocchio for everything that he taught him, but he's like, you know what? Now I need to go find out how I want to paint. And like you said, he's discovering new ways and he's breaking new ground with the subjects. And so again, I just think he's one of these many artists who's talented. He's got an ego and he just wants to see how far he can go. Fuck the law.
Long as it doesn't involve pussy.
Right. Please don't get that pussy near me.
Spiky. Too spiky. All right. Well, that is that. We'll be back next time with more Leonardo.